Hey, and welcome to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interviews. Today we have a fabulous film, and I mean fabulous. It has some strange stuff in it, and I can't wait to get into it. We have the director, Honey Lawrence, here, Wives of the Sky. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Thank you, and what a great intro.
I think we got to discuss, is this supposed to be a period piece? Because that's the way I took it.
Well, it is a period piece. It takes place in 1965.
Okay.
It absolutely is a period piece, yeah.
Well, I have to ask, because, I mean, you definitely, I think the music gives it away mostly, and the costuming.
I'm sorry, say that last part?
The music and the costuming really promotes that for me.
Yes. I mean, we kept it, it was surprisingly easier to do a period piece than I thought. I was, you know, 1965 was a long time ago, but things like Goodwill, thrift stores like that made it super easy. And I had a wonderful seamstress. I designed the costumes and she made them for the stewardesses. And I was really pleased with how it looked. Really pleased.
Now, your music, how did you settle on what sounds? Because I think it has a very funky sound. Yeah. Like it definitely felt I was watching a 60s film.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, okay. So the composer, his name is Josh Vanagon. I worked with him twice before. And he was, we had a lot of source music for him to listen to, like lounge music.
Yes.
And one of the things I said to him was that, you know, that I felt like the beginning, like this was a dance. So he kind of took that and he made the beginning sort of a waltz and then the scene where Derek goes into their the stewardess's hotel room, it became a tango, and then we went back to the waltz later. So he kind of incorporated all that within the style of the music, this lounge kind of beautiful, stunning music. And then the other music, which was the record player and the girls dancing at a party, things like that, was sourced out to a wonderful gentleman named Craig Owens, who does a lot of TV, music for television. He fell in love with the project, the film, because I gave it to him almost finished. I just needed four pieces of music. And he did amazing work with that. My husband wrote some of the lyrics for the Go-Go Girl song, and I wrote some of the lyrics for another song. And, you know, it was a group effort, but we did it. And I must say, though, Josh, the composer, Josh Vanagon, did a great job.
How does it feel being an artiste and seeing your lyrics on screen and people reacting to that for the first time?
Well, you know, I'm not really a songwriter, but this time seeing everyone talking about how much they love the music I was so happy. I mean, it was incredible to hear what Craig did with the Go-Go Girl song and the Ting-a-Ling song on the record player. And but I also have to give a lot of thanks to Davey Robertson, who was the DP, as well as the editor. He put in a good source music track for me to get some great ideas as well. Of course, we couldn't use the source music, you know, but it was so helpful in giving us ideas what to do with the music in the film.
Now, being a very small production, how did you finding your sets? Is it an actual set on the hotel? I was having problems.
Oh my God, thanks for asking. This is my favorite thing to talk about because the truth is we got so lucky. One of the producers who was also one of the stewardesses, the blonde girl, Madison Bullock, such a great actress, great producer, she had a connection to the Montauban Theater in Hollywood, which is a theater from the 1920s, I want to say. So we took the lobby and we turned it into a stewardess hotel. We did that all in like 2 hours. We figured out we booked the place. We paid almost nothing for it. We got in there and we set up. And we brought in pieces, you know, set pieces, things like that. And we also had to work with a lot of the existing art that was there that happened to be there, like macrame and crazy things, but it all worked out. And it looked just like the 60s. And as far as a hotel room, oh my gosh, we found that on Airbnb. It's an apartment. It's a condo in the valley in Los Angeles, in Woodland Hills. And this nice lady on Airbnb let us use it to film in. And I fell in love with it because it was all lavender. And the couches were lavender, and it was almost monochromatic, like the 60s. And then it had both deep blue walls and things like that. And we were able to create like this wonderful kind of hotel room feel to this apartment building, this condo. And I feel like production design wise, we got super lucky with that. Very lucky. So, basically lavender is the national lesbian color, you know, so I wanted that in there. And I had a great time fixing up the place. We also had some wonderful sculptures of our own from the 60s, like we put on the walls, things like that. So we got very lucky, and the production designer really did a good job with what we had.
Now, I'm going to ask you a weird question. The service serves pigs in the blanket. Was there more to that, or just that was our appetizer?
Yeah, I think it was a play on the kinbaku, the fact that they were roped.
Okay, and, that's what know, I was
they were
thinking.
They were snuggled.
Well, I was going to skip discussing the bondage to later, but obviously we're going to bring it up earlier, so let's get into the bondage.
Yeah.
Why a bondage angle? I've never seen that in a film before, so I thought it was neat and new, so thank you for that.
Oh, cool. So, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, the kinbaku, for people who don't know what kinbaku is, it's a Japanese rope tying technique that is beautiful. It means the beauty of tight binding, kinbaku, just to give a little history. And back in, I don't know, the 1500s, I think in Japan, they used it to hold prisoners and things like that. But in this case, now to modern day, it's a BDSM kind of thing. And in the film, though, there's a lot of humor with it. You know that. So there's no nudity in the film, but this was this little crazy kink that these stewardesses did with each other, I suppose. But I didn't know what it was either. What happened is I wrote the script, and when I decided to make it, I just had this vision. I knew what I wanted it to look like. So I Googled the beautiful roping, and shibari or kinbaku came up, and I saw the images, which I must have seen somewhere before, but I thought, oh my God, this is what I'm talking about. It had to look beautiful, not like these women were hogtied, but more a beautiful sculpture. So I was lucky enough to get one of the masters of kinbaku here in the States interested in the film. Actually, I put an ad out on Meetup. Do you know what that is?
No, I have never heard of it.
Meetup is just this thing that you sign up on when you're looking for a group. Like, I'm looking for a group of clowns or people who like to do this. So I found a kinbaku group on Meetup, and I said, hi, my name is Honey, doing this film. And I, like, within a minute got three responses, probably because my name's Honey and I was interested in kinbaku. They contacted me immediately, and I got to meet with them, and they liked the project, and so I was lucky to get this Master K, who, like I said, he wrote the book, The Beauty of Kinbaku, which is a gorgeous book on the subject, and he was wonderful to work with. So I got very lucky. That was, I thought, going to be the hardest part in making this movie, and it turned out to be the easiest, because I had the master to do it.
Well, I'm going to have to ask, how long does it take to tie somebody up in kinbaku?
Sure, sure. Yeah, that is a great question, because that was my big concern. We wouldn't have the time. What you saw, I mean, these girls were completely, it's incredible that they even did it. But yes, it took about 20 minutes, literally 20 minutes.
That's it,
which is insane. It's insane. I was like, because I know nothing about it, my mind was, can we just rig it up and they jump in there? You know? But it doesn't work like that. They had to really be tied up, because you need the tension and the rope in order to make the beautiful designs. So I had to find girls that were, these two actresses, I had to really make sure that they were on board, you know, because when you make a movie, it takes a long time. It's a long day. And they were tied up a long time. Of course, that was an anxiety for me, because there's just a thought of it. I'd have to get out of there and run to the restroom, you know, immediately.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, how are they supposed to eat? How are they supposed to move? All these questions during the film were coming to my mind.
Yeah, they didn't. It was incredible. Of course, you know, when people see the film, they'll know what we're talking about. The first girl, Rachel Alig, who I've worked with before, I knew she'd be able to do it because she's done some incredible crazy in her career. And we've worked together. I'm also an actor. And she, what we did is we had a practice session. That was part of the deal, that we had to go to his rope dojo, Master K's, and practice and come up with a design, decide on the rope color, decide on the lighting, things like that, so we can really feature it beautifully and see, is this something you can do? Because a lot of people get claustrophobic. So the truth of the matter is they were tied up for hours. It's crazy. And not just like, I mean, we're talking intricate design. But again, it only took about 20 minutes to get into them. What? To get, yeah, incredible. Well, he worked very quickly, and his he had a assistant as well who helped him. A deshi, I think they call it. Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm still impressed. You seem to have synchronicity of the stewardesses talking. How long did that take to work out?
You know, I only have one rehearsal. One rehearsal that lasted maybe 3 or 4 hours, but that's for the entire film. The costuming, I had to feed everybody the first time I heard it out loud. So that was a few weeks before we shot. So we had to go on set, and, you know, it wasn't that hard to do because these are very good actresses. In fact, every single actor in the movie, there are four of them, I worked with them all, and many have worked with each other. So that was very helpful, I think. And they just happened to be very good, and I told them, look, play it for real. Don't, you know, there's a lot of hyper real in the script, but play it for real. And that was a note that seemed to help both of them. And we did just very, very little rehearsal, really. So I attribute it to very good acting, good actors.
You were talking about the hyper real. Now, can we discuss Kevin at this point?
Say that again?
Kevin, the other cameraman?
Oh, yes.
Does Kevin know what he's doing?
My favorite character, Kevin.
He is my favorite too.
In my mind, the lead actor, who's this photojournalist from England, is really just trying to get laid, right?
Yeah, absolutely he is.
Yeah, he's at a stewardess hotel. My God. And so he's like, I'll just do a documentary on them. So I think when he gets invited up to the room finally, he probably met Kevin in the lobby and said, hey, you know, just hold the camera. I got these hot girls here. Let's, you know. We got an in here, and I think he was just along for the ride. Of course, he turned out to be super cool next to the other guy, and he was wonderful. He did a great job. His name is Sebastian Fernandez, and he and I worked together with Rachel in another film for Paul McCarthy, and I knew he was a great actor. I mean, I just told him he has to give good face in this movie. So he made some wonderful, bold decisions. We worked it out. It was wonderful.
Well, I think he does great. He's my favorite character. I want a whole story of what Kevin's going to be doing next.
Yeah. I love that you said that. You know, he turned into one of my favorites too. But for real, because he literally, when people see it, he has two lines. That is it. And the rest is all him. Reactions and the camera work and, oh, my gosh. He's just, obviously the real camera work was done by Davey Robertson, who did the real world. He did the real world and the Super 8 camera. But Sebastian is, I mean, the choices. It was not an easy role for him to do. And he did it like it was nothing. It was wonderful.
I think you could do a whole short on Day of the Life of Kevin. I think it's there.
I love that. Oh, my God. He's too cool for school, is what I told him. He's the one who's going to get the girl.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure. And what a great dancer he is.
Yeah, he gets it. Now you're bringing to my next question. The dance scene in high heels. I mean, being a man, watching people dance in high heels, I always think that's crazy.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I told her, okay, Madison, the beautiful blonde girl who's actually a brunette, of course, that was a beautiful wig. She, in real life, is also a professional ice skater. She's a beautiful woman who can move her body really well. Just her posture was beautiful. But I told her I wanted her to dance so badly because she's like this terrible white girl. In the 60s, those girls did not know how to dance. So I just wanted her to be like almost to the point where you didn't want to have sex with her. She danced so badly. And so I kept saying, screaming, pigeon toe, just anything to get her to look like she couldn't dance well. And she did a great job dancing poorly. She was wonderful.
Okay. Who made the dinner in the dinner scene?
So fortunately, That's such a great question, because I can't take credit for this. I was just going to rope up the chicken, you know, that was it. But fortunately, my production designer said, do you mind, do you think the rope guy, you know, the Kimbaka master would mind roping the chicken for me? And I'm like, oh, I don't know if we could ask him, because he's, you know, I only paid him for 3 designs. So we asked him, he was more than happy to, and he gave the chicken the same design, of course, as Marcy, the blonde. So I was just going to do it myself, you know, just rope it up. So I had the Kimbaka master do that dinner as well.
Oh, that's funny. That is.
It was hilarious. I was so thrilled with his work. Wow. What a great guy. We're friends now. I just adore him.
How do people react to this film when they see it? I guess that's a really honest question. Wow. I mean, your film is so whimsical and fun and different than anything else you would see at a festival, I would say, and I've seen in a while.
Well, I'm going to tell you that for the most part, when people actually watch the film, they kind of go manic for it, kind of crazy. I mean, we've won like 25 awards in 8 weeks,
wow,
which is insane. And I hope we get to play more festivals, but with what's happening in the world, it may not happen, you know, because of the virus. I mean, it'll probably, hopefully we have a bunch of festivals we're slated to be in, and I have had one already had to cancel. So, I hope this film gets the run it deserves, because it's people are kind of really loving it. I'm honestly, like, I'm a little overwhelmed by the response. Alternately, there's been when I first sent it out to 1 or 2 festivals that I've done really well with my other films. So they knew me. They 2 actually turned it down and said, one of them said, this is a family festival. And they didn't want to show it. I'm like, this is the most G-rated thing I've ever done and seen. It's such a G-rated movie.
It is.
It really is. There's nothing carnal going on here. And obviously that festival director, the carnality was in their head, not in the film. And I understand that. We're talking roping and beautiful girls and stewardess outfits and things like that. But if you watch the movie, there's nothing carnal at all. These are good girls drawn bad. They just look bad, but they're so good. They're so pure of heart. And the subject matter is as well. This just happens to be a little funny thing that they do. Yes, they do that, but they're fully clothed. And if anything, it's a little queasy maybe, you know, when Derek's in the room. We got a beautiful, wonderful review from, and the reviewer though said, abject discomfort. That's how she described the movie. She loved it, and she wanted to watch it over and over and over, but she called it abject discomfort. I'm thinking, it's a comedy. I'm not understanding that. So there's it's a mixed bag, but overall it's doing well, and I pray that it gets the run, you know, that the festivals can play it, can happen.
Because your films are short, what do you do with it after the film festival?
Yeah, so with a short, what you do is it really then gets a life, a different kind of life than the festival. They have video on demand for shorts. I think this will find a home with a lot of streaming channels, because with shorts, you don't have to give up the rights. You don't have to usually be exclusive. You can be non-exclusive, so it can play on various different platforms. And I've already been offered about 2 different places to stream it. And I will when the festival run is done, and it will find a home on various platforms.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes once in a while there are different places that will actually screen a short in front of a feature, and there's a very slim possibility, but it could happen. My last short got actually a distribution deal and played in a movie theater for a week, and I was like, okay, so maybe this one will too. I don't know.
I hope maybe. So. I think people need to see this film. I think they need to see something different.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
This is from a guy that watches a ton of film. A ton. Oh,
gosh, I'm so happy you said that. Thank you. I'm so grateful for that.
Oh, your film is fabulous. I'd just like to ask this question about small independent. How do you feed your crew? What's your plan?
Say that one more time.
How do you feed? Do your catering.
Yeah. Oh, Yeah, that's a good question. So in this film, for example, we actually had a craft service always, you know, like a table for snacks. And then we catered lunch, like literally what do we feed? Most people were vegan on this shoot, which was crazy, but we had something for everybody. So I was able to get it catered by a wonderful place in LA, like a Mexican restaurant. So that was lovely. But we just cater it like a regular feature. There's lots of places out there that you can hire to do something like that. It's costly, but you have to feed your people.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree with you. That's why I like food, so I want to know what you feed them.
Me too. Oh, my gosh. I know. I'm always asking, how was the food at that shoot? That's so important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, we spent a lot on that, so.
Well, that's good.
But I would have liked to even spend more, to be honest. If I had more money, I would have.
Wow, that's very nice of you. Okay, it's time for your fun questions.
Oh, boy.
Because it's your first time on the show, if you come back, you won't get this question ever again. Okay. I promise. Favorite film?
Oh, that's sort of easy for me. My favorite film is Bad Lieutenant. I don't know. I saw that movie, gosh, a million years ago, and I watched it about 5 times. I'm not kidding. Within like a 2-week period, I was obsessed with it. And Harvey Keitel was so astounding. I mean, it was life-changing for me to watch it. And Abel Ferrara, I became an instant fan. And lucky me, my first script, I had a company that put an offer out to him to direct, so I got to go hang out with him for a few days in New York when he was deciding, and they were deciding if they can make this happen with him. So so I would say definitely Bad Lieutenant.
Fair enough. One actor you would like to direct at some point in your life?
Well, I can't not bring up Christopher Walken. Ah. He was my schoolgirl crush. Well, everybody else liked, you know, other people, but I just think that he's wonderful. I've gotten to meet with him several times in my career, not to work with him. I've never worked with him, but he's such a smart man, and I think he would be incredible. We both come from a dance background, and I think he'd be incredible to work with.
Well, you're rocking these questions today. I'm very impressed. Oh. The one film you've never seen and should have.
Oh, God. If I tell you, you're going to hate me, but here we go. And it's so bad, but I never saw Apocalypse Now. Never.
Okay.
Never. And I did, I worked with Coppola. I never, never saw it. And I'm like, what's wrong with me? How come I've never seen this movie? Any of the versions that are out there. So I'm bad.
So your film is stuck, unfortunately, on the film festival circuit. So we can't tell people where to find it. But we probably could promote your website here or your Twitter handle or whatever you'd like to promote.
Absolutely. Well, we are at, of course, www.wivesoftheskies.com, wivesoftheskies.com. I'm Honey Lauren at Honey Lauren for my Twitter and my Instagram and Wives of the Skies. We just started an Instagram, a little late to the game there on that. And they also, they're on Facebook, Wives of the Skies, and so am I, Honey Lauren. And hopefully soon, I mean, I have a bunch of festivals it's playing at. It's coming to Canada. What am I saying? It's coming to Toronto. I should tell you, the Canadian Cinematography Awards are playing them July 4th in Toronto. It won 5 awards from them, and we won the opportunity to screen with them July 4th. Yeah, so there you go.
Well, there you go, Canadian listeners. If you're in Toronto and the virus has settled down, great film to see. You have full recommendation for me. Please go see it. Thank you for your time. You're a wonderful guest. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.